traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Welcome to the Contrarian Investor Podcast. We give voice to those who challenge a prevailing sentiment in global financial markets. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests were not compensated for their appearance, nor do they supply payment in order to appear. Individuals on this podcast may hold positions in the securities that are discussed. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Now, here's your host, Mr. Nathaniel E. Baker.
Oil stocks have recently rebounded. They had kind of had a tough couple years, and energy prices have rebounded as well. And a lot of this was due to tension in the Middle East. But nevertheless, there is a lot of traction now, you feel, with interest rates low and other variables, that oil companies or energy companies in general do present a lot of value. And I think their share prices just in the recent couple of weeks and months has kind of reflected that view. But you have a contrarian view on this, and which is one that's quite a lot more secular than just the short term. So maybe I'll just let you take it away and talk about that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as you say, yeah, energy stock valuations are very low compared with the broader market. But being cheap doesn't necessarily mean that it's value.
Right.
It's got to be a much more compelling sort of contrarian reason than that. But I think on the fundamentals, there's a potential for slowing in shale growth in the US. You're seeing the last of the sort of big $100 per barrel oil fields coming on, particularly in sort of Norway and Brazil. But my thesis, my thoughts are really something I think more fundamental with the industry, which dates back 20 odd years, but also will I think have an impact on the fundamentals going forward, and that is really the similarities between the oil industry, but the fossil fuel sector more broadly, with the tobacco industry back in the late 1990s. And if you sort of cast your mind back to that period, the industry was really kind of feared, hated, disgraced even, and there was a lot of lawsuits that were coming up to claims against people's health. It was a really unpopular business to be in. But what we've seen over the last two decades is that tobacco companies in particular have outperformed the broader market, the S&P 500, and even really outperforming those pharmaceutical companies who are actually trying to combat smoking-related illnesses. And the way I am thinking about the oil sector more broadly is that it's starting to become a sin stock. So in the same way that tobacco and other industries like, perhaps guns or defense, alcohol, are very much in that same sort of category. But I think the point to remember is that the market for any particular stock, for any particular equity, still has to clear. So even if some investors won't invest in a particular type of company, then the only way to really attract funds is to offer a higher expected return in the future. So what we've seen with the tobacco sector and other sin stocks is a much higher dividend yield to counter for that, that perception of, or that constraint that's placed on them by institutional investors. So the other thing to bear in mind with those particular types of companies is that they tend to have a high exposure to high profitability, or highly profitable sectors. Yeah, so their the demand for their product is highly price inelastic, and the whole constraint on the investment into their sector, affects how they can grow their assets. So it reduces the supply of that product onto the market. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing clearly now with the fossil fuel sector, but oil is a sector I'm particularly interested in, is we're seeing an increased trend towards divestment.
Okay. Well, let's go back here a little bit. This parallel to tobacco. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever saw the show Mad Men. It's this show that takes place in New York in the 60s, in the early 60s, and well, throughout the 60s. And it's about the advertising industry. And one of their clients is a tobacco firm. And the start of the show, they're talking about how this kind of, they're joking about this idea that smoking is bad for you. And it's kind of like, are people still talking about that smoking causes cancer? Mm-hmm. We dealt with that a long time ago. So anyway, so back then these tobacco stocks were, industry giants and they were big companies and these products were used by very many people. Fast forward to the 90s and smoking was clearly on the out. But for a long time in the intervening years, I think the issue was that the tobacco companies didn't acknowledge that smoking was harmful, or maybe they didn't acknowledge the full extent of it. Now, is there something similar, and that's what caused then all these lawsuits and things that I think are still some of them being settled, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so is there something similar that is going on with companies with energy companies and companies that deal with fossil fuels that you can put your finger on where you can draw kind of a clear line between these two?
Yeah, so I mean, there was a case against Exxon very recently that there was a claim that they had misled the public about the climate impact of fossil fuels. There's some similarities there. And I think we're clearly with the messages that are coming through from oil companies in particular is that they are being very aware that their sector is sustainability, the environment is crucially important to the future, including their companies. So we're seeing some oil companies investing in reducing the carbon impact of their production. More and more of the oil majors investing in renewable technology. So you could argue that much like the tobacco companies invested in alternative products, more healthy products like vaping, you could argue, we could see that start to happen with oil companies. So if you think of like a company like Shell, they have moved increasingly from oil towards gas, so reducing the carbon impact. But I think we're going to see much more aggressive moves in that direction. So it's still satisfying the likely growth in energy demand, both America, Europe, and specifically Asia and Africa, but in a much more environmentally sustainable way. Mm.
So will that hurt or help their share prices over the medium term?
It certainly depends. I think if they that those high carbon assets that they've got at the moment, that they're either going to be written down or they're going to be in the current climate, perhaps selling them off cheap to competitors. So it could, I think in the interim, the short-term period, it could be a headwind to stock prices. That doesn't necessarily mean that they go down. It's just it's a barrier perhaps for them to get much, much further up. Mm-hmm. But I think as the message from previous from the tobacco companies two decades ago, is that relative cheapness creates an opportunity then over a period of several years, a decade or more, for that share price to outperform in the future. Mm. So we could we could see earnings coming under pressure initially, but in the longer term that I think what's similar but also different to the tobacco sector is that the higher cost of capital that divestment will bring will act to slow supply growth. And that will then, of course, mean that the price of energy goes up, which will then increase earnings in the future. So much like tobacco companies, which have a a relatively price inelastic product, where they can have some control over the price that they charge their end user. I think the whole divestment trend will have the same impact on the price of energy. I think it will cut supply, increase prices. That will be positive for earnings, and then it will be positive for the share price of oil companies in the long run.
Mm-hmm. What about new and alternate sources of energy, solar, wind, turbine, and things like that? These have been increasing in recent years and becoming more affordable. And would that create more supply? And then would that, hurt the companies that are, or hurt the revenues of the companies that are involved in this?
I think potentially. I think as the oil majors and others, fossil fuel companies, become more and more diversified, it'll be about having a portfolio of different energy supplies, of different carbon, carbon intensities. In the world as we are at the moment, at least, it's just not possible to have a complete transition towards renewable energy. You need some balance in there, which does include fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting historical parallel, and this time it's in the lead market. So mm-hmm. again, back in the late 1980s and early 90s, it was an incredibly unpopular business to be in because of the health effects of lead were coming to light through unleaded petrol was starting to be introduced, lead in paints and other products were starting to be scrapped. So there's this impact on demand, but because it's such an unpopular business to be in, there was not enough investment in new mines, new smelters. When demand did eventually increase, there just wasn't the supply there to respond. So I think the price of lead increased by 7 times, I think, in the early 2000s. And I'm not suggesting we're going to see anything similar for oil, but these kind of barriers to investment, barriers to increasing supply, have the effect that they when demand does increase, supply can't respond.
I'm wondering, do you do much with things like lithium? Because there's been a lot of talk recently, or even not so recent, about electric cars and how these batteries, which all require lithium. And, the run on lithium as a commodity and separately also cobalt for the same reasons. And cobalt supply is very limited from what I understand. There's only a couple countries in the world that produce it, and they're pretty volatile from a geopolitical standpoint. Do you have any views on those things?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great observation, really. The DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo is sort of 60% of the cobalt supply. Places like Chile, Bolivia, especially, are lithium supply is concentrated in those countries in particular. Those are important things to think about from when I think about the geopolitical point of view. I think one of the ways I've thought about that is to try and leverage the growth in EV demand is to sometimes look at it and see if there's a producer in a more reliable country. You could argue Canada, there's some cobalt producers.
Oh, there is. Okay.
There, or from the other angle to think about it is from a end of life point of view. So actually recovering and recycling those materials from. from the car or from the vehicles. So I think that's an interesting way to think about it. I think the other thing for investors to bear in mind is that historically, these kind of niche metals like lithium, cobalt, other ones like rhodium, palladium, and others, they've tended to have really astronomical returns for a few years. And then for whatever reason, the cycle turns, demand suddenly drops. A car producer might dump a load of stock. The price then, returns back to earth very, very quickly.
Yes, indeed. Cool. Awesome. I want to take a short break, and then I want to come back and get a little bit more concrete, if you'll pardon the pun. I know concrete is not a metal, but let's do that real quick.
You are listening to the Contrarian Investor Podcast. You're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other platforms where podcasts are found. Subscribe and supply an honest rating. We're on social media. Search for Contrarian Investor Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on LinkedIn as well. Go to linkedin.com/Contrarian Podcast. We want to hear from our listeners. Email your thoughts to feedback@contrarianpod.com. A repository of all podcast episodes and materials is available on our website, contrarianpod.com. Now, back to the program. Here's Mr. Baker.
Tell me a little bit about your background, how you came to become so focused and specialized in commodities and write these books.
Yeah. So, a bit further background, I sort of graduated about 20 years ago and, in economics. So I've always had an interest in macroeconomics and, trying to understand how the world works. But I've always found, the commodity market especially interesting, partly because it's just you can see and touch it, you can explain it to someone, you can explain it to a kid effectively what you're talking about. But it's also got so many interesting factors involved with it. In fact, from speculation to geopolitics to the weather to you name it, there's so many different factors that affect the price and expectations about what might happen in the future. And so, as part of my own individual journey as becoming an investor in the sector and trying to understand more about it and I really wanted to help others. Part of the best way to learn about a particular subject is to be able to teach it and to be able to explain it. And so that's really part of the reason that motivated me into writing the books that I've written about the sector. And I should also say I write a blog, which is materials-risk.com, which is where I I kind of record my thoughts about some of the interesting things that I'm seeing in not just commodities but also sort of the broader sort of macroeconomic environment as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a cool resource, materials-risk.com. Check it out. And there's a blog there, recommended reading and best podcasts, which I didn't check, but I'm assuming that this one is in there, of course. What are some areas that you are in commodities that you are most excited about in terms of an investor that you think investors should pay the closest attention to right now as we record this in January 2020?
Aside from the oil sector, I think one other area I'm really sort of focused on is gold. And being exposed to sort of gold miners, especially to try and leverage that potential increase. So I think over the next, three up to 6 months, I think there's a really sort of interesting pattern emerging, from a technical perspective, where prices could start to go much higher, but also in lead up to both the presidential election in November. And potentially sort of pressures within the global economy that could could see, you know, prices start to go much higher. I think gold. You know, I've been quite honest, I've been burnt in being overly exposed to one particular company in gold miners in the past. So I'd only ever kind of advise, you know, having a, you know, real sort of diversified exposure to, you know, gold miners. But
you're not supposed to admit that. The first rule of being an investor is not to admit any mistakes publicly. But go on.
No, I know. I find it quite a good thing to do sometimes, to actually admit your mistakes. But back in 2013, 2014, I was a bit too keen perhaps at the time, and got too early into the market. But for the last, shall I say, about, you know, 2 years, I've been gradually building up an exposure to, you know, gold miners, and that's been a good run over the last couple of years. So I think there's potentially a lot more traction in the market going forward as well, even from these levels. I think for those investors based in America, but, you know, what you tend to look at is the price of gold in dollars. And if you looked at that chart, you'd see, you know, it's still a long way below the all-time highs. But if, you know, in virtually, you know, many other countries around the world, gold is already, you know, in record territory. And that indicates to me that, yeah, you know, there are some, you know, serious concerns about low interest rates, and even negative interest rates, and, you know, the outlook for how debt is growing, and how that is all going to play out. So that's an interesting area for me that I'm focused on.
Oh, okay, interesting. So, but specifically gold miners, not the gold, the precious metal itself.
Well, I think both. Mm-hmm. But the way I've been playing it is a, you know, kind of a diversified exposure to gold mines.
Mm-hmm. And anything else on that you're bullish about in the world of commodities?
I think those are probably the two, you know, gold and oil, I think, is mm-hmm. the two. I'm particularly interested in at the moment, particularly excited about.
All right. Okay, then flip side of that, what are you most concerned about?
That's an interesting question. In terms of,
well, I guess a couple of ways. First of all, like what commodity do you think is maybe overvalued or is due for a pullback? Obviously, commodities do kind of, many of them trade in tandem, so may not be possible to answer that. But yeah, so maybe that'll be
I think on that I would, and I'll give it the caveat that, yeah, you know, many of these markets can trend for a long period of time, so, you know, it's very dangerous to even think about sort of shorting some of these,
of course,
some of these prices. But one that I would say is looking interesting or looking frothy is the palladium market.
Really? Okay.
So, you know, that's over $2,000 now. And it's gone up, I think, from, you know, 4 or 5 times over the last year or two. And that's been driven by, you know, some of the factors we've talked about today, really, about the drive to more environmentally friendly cities. So, you know, increased use of catalytic converters, you know, there's an increased demand for palladium. But what we're seeing now is this, you know, the price of platinum, which is an alternative metal used in catalytic converters, is still, you know, below $1,000. So we've got, you know, this, you know, massive differential opened up between the two prices. And there's one interesting way of looking at whether we're starting to see, you know, car makers substitute those metals, and that's to look at the import volumes going to a country called Macedonia in Europe, where there is a particular company that's it's the only company there, and they import both materials into the country, and you can see on a month by month basis how much of each metal they're using. And in the past, going back three or four years, you could see a big change in the market. You know, there was a big shift towards using palladium when the price was much lower. But for the moment, at least, we're not seeing that substitution effect from substitution demand from car makers to move to platinum. But when I think that does start to play out, it's then I think that palladium will start to look very, 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 very pricey at these levels.
Interesting. I believe that country recently rebranded to North Macedonia, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
to differentiate it from the Greek province. But and so you're saying now walk me through this. There's a company there that imports palladium, which is used by automakers, or how does this all work?
Yeah, so that's right. So they manufacture the catalytic converter.
Oh, I see.
So they import a range of the two different metals into the country.
Okay.
But by looking at the monthly import data, you can see changes in their usage of that particular metal.
Uh-huh.
So in the past, it's been quite a good indicator.
So quite a good indicator for how automakers are using palladium versus platinum.
Exactly. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
And what is the mix now, pretty much, like ballpark?
It's still very much in, the majority is palladium.
Okay.
I forget how many percentage it is, but in the sort of 60-70%.
Okay. Has that started to change?
It has to an extent, but it's not significant enough to say that there's been a big change in the market.
Okay.
I think it's something to watch, certainly.
Yeah, no doubt. That's an interesting, I did not know anything about that metric. What do you think is some event that could really upset energy markets? And I mean, the Middle East, obviously, and geopolitical stuff, those are obvious ones. And we saw how that all played out with Iran, missile attacks and things, drone attacks a couple of weeks ago. But beyond that, is there anything else that people might not be looking at that could really upend the whole supply chain for energy or anything like that?
I think you could argue it's an obvious one, but I don't think it's necessarily been linked in this way. And so, in Australia, we've seen these record temperatures, for I don't know how many weeks, all the bushfires over there. But what many people haven't mentioned or drawn a link to is that we're likely to see, these periods of intense climate are likely to be more regular in the future. But that also means that crops grown within those particular regions are likely to be under a lot of pressure. To use example in Australia, it's quite a big wheat producer. That their crop is likely to be affected. At the moment that's being counterbalanced by growth in other regions. But I think I think over the last 4 or 5 years we've got used to this. It's been a sort of relatively benign growing conditions in America and in Europe, especially. If this these periods of intense weather conditions happen more frequently in the future, and then if they affect areas where a crop is very concentrated, so if you think of like sort of coffee in South America or cocoa in West Africa, then that will seriously affect the the prices of those commodities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I think that is something that potentially could be interesting for investors to keep an eye out for.
No doubt. All right, last question. I on this whole topic of climate change and stuff and alternative energies, we touched on it earlier. What alternative energy do you think is going to be the leader in the next, couple of generations as we hopefully move away from fossil fuels? I imagine you've thought about that, but there's obviously handicaps and impediments and barriers to all of them. Is there one that you're particularly excited about?
I think you've kind of touched on how difficult it is to answer that question. Yeah, it's all very context dependent on geography and the economics of how it operates. But I think I take a step back and think about what would enable any of them to be commercially viable in the future. And I think that centers on the battery, to be able to store the electricity generated to help balance the electricity grid, to make it, a competitor to current, current forms of generation. So, I think my interest in probably I think where the greatest opportunity is, or perhaps the least downside risk, is to focus on the enabling factors which enable that to take place. So the battery being the most interesting part of it.
Okay, cool. All right, that's not the answer I was looking for, but that's fair enough. I guess. All right, cool. Well, other than the website materialsrisk.com and the books that we mentioned, you also have a Twitter, which is how I found you.
Yeah,
it's Peter Sainsbury 7. Peter Sainsbury, right. 7. Yeah. Is there a particular meaning behind the number 7, or you just picked that for the hell of it?
I think it's just a lucky number.
So. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Lucky for me.
Okay.
That's probably the best way to get in contact with me and see the links to both my blog and the books as well.
Very cool, and we'll put all that in the show notes as well, so people can access it from the show.
All right,
very cool, Peter. Thank you so much for joining me. That completes this podcast, and we'll look forward to speaking to you again next time.
Thank you for listening to the Contrarian Investor Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. To subscribe to this podcast, simply open your favorite podcast software and search for Contrarian Investor. Follow us on social media by searching for Contrarian Investor on Twitter and Instagram. Send us your thoughts on feedback@contrarianpod.com. We look forward to speaking to you again next time.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.